Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Literary Weapons Podcast. I'm Joshua.
And I'm Liv.
And today, we are here to talk about the Faithful and the Fallen series by John Gwynn. Before we get into the books, let's talk about our wine. What do you got?
I've got Karen Birmingham's 2021 Sauvignon Blanc.
Sauvignon Blanc.
And I'd rate it a... just no thumbs.
Just meh?
Really, yeah. I don't love it.
So I'm going to go with meh on mine, too. I have a Capital Louis Vieira Reserva. I'm going to give it a meh.
Mm-hmm. I like the name, though.
It's for a pretty name.
It's very foreign.
So I'm going to jump into the books. So this is a four-part series. And then there's a continuation of four books that happens like centuries later. I don't know if I'll eventually read the second part, probably. I'm just going to go and spoil it. These were good. I liked them. I don't think you would like them.
Really?
Yeah. I'll try to get you into it. But it might take spoiling a few things to get you into it.
Mm.
So, but for anyone listening, there is going to be a spoiler free and then a spoiler section. And we will make it very well known at what point the spoilers start. So I guess we can just go ahead and jump in. Talking about the world. It's called The Banished Lands.
The Banished Lands.
Mm-hmm. So this is... this is set after, like, there was a giant... Basically, it's, like, the Christian, like, mythos of... but this is, like, after Revelation.
Oh, okay.
So, like, there was sins done. Humans were consorting with... basically Lucifer and demons. And so God came down and smote everything.
He smote?
Smote it.
He smoted.
And so there's a giant war between the angels and the demons. Angels and God won. And there was just a small collection of people that were left over. And then a few giants and other creatures. But it's like total destruction of the world. And so this is like 2,000 years later after, they call it like the scourging or the scouring, but it's basically Revelation. So, yeah, like I said, it's very like Christian themed. They change a few names here and there, but like...
but it's a little, it's biblical.
It's very biblical.
It goes off the Bible, gotcha.
Yeah, so like there's angels...
the Bible lore.
The Bible lore, yes. this is not canon though, for all those that were wondering. So yeah, there's angels and demons. Like, for instance, one of the characters is Mechiel. And he's...
Michael.
Yeah, he's Michael the Archangel. And he is the captain of all angels.
Okay.
But the major thing about the world is that after Revelation, God became, like, absent and withdrawn. And it's not that he's, like, disappeared. It's just that he is so overwhelmed with grief that he doesn't want to have anything to do with the world anymore.
Gotcha.
So since he had to kill, like, most of creation because they were sinners... like, that grief and everything, he kind of just went, like, AWOL.
Mm-hmm.
That's the gist of what's going on.
He's big sad.
Big sad, yeah.
Big sad.
Well, he did have to kill, like, 90% of his children.
Yeah, I'd be big sad, too.
Yeah. So, going back to the world, there's a bunch of kingdoms. So, one thing I really like is all the different kingdoms in the areas have very different cultures. And very different, like, biomes. Like, it's not just, like, Western Europe, you know. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, there's desert, there's jungle, swampland, like, and the cultures match that. That's one thing I really enjoy about this is that, like, there's a bunch of characters. Like, POV chapters, there's probably 20 different POVs that you have to keep track of.
Jeez.
And each one has their own side characters. Woof. But, like, they're all from different areas of the world, and they all kind of react to things differently. Mm-hmm. So I really like that. So, yeah, there's the kingdoms of men, and then there's these giant clans. I'll talk a lot about the giant clans in the spoiler section, because they are super cool. But as far as you need to know, like, the humans are only so this is a vibe that I got kind of throughout, that the humans are only dominant because they have a faster reproduction rate and time to mature. Hmm. So, for people that have seen The Mandalorian, they're like, the giants are like Baby Yoda or Grogu, where like it takes them centuries to be like full grown adults, and they only have like a baby every century. Okay. So, but they're like, you'll see like kind of throughout, like the giants, I think, are smarter and better in every way than humans. Like, they're not like your stereotypical giants where they're like big and dumb and mean. Mm-hmm. Like, they're basically human minds just in
ginormous human bodies.
Yes, but they have better athleticism, infinite stamina, and they have like way better technology.
That is not common.
And they're in tune with nature. So, like, they're just...
they're hippie, technologically sound, yeah. Like...
the giants, honestly, are so much more interesting and better in every way than the humans. Huh. And I feel like that's a nice, like, turn of events. Because usually in these kind of stories, I feel like giants are kind of like the butt of the joke.
Yeah.
Like, they're big and scary. And they're kind of like a caricature, almost. Whereas these, like, they have a lot of depth. They have just as much depth as the human characters.
Gotcha.
They're honestly a big bright spot in the story. Like, every chapter that involves the giants was fantastic. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, a bunch of characters, and you get point of views from a whole bunch of different species. So there's human point of views, giant point of views, angel and demon point of views, and they all feel very distinct. Like, the way that they think are different across the species, especially the angels and demons.
I would hope so.
Yeah, like, but you can just tell, like, in the writing that their brains work different. In a very interesting way that we can talk about later. There's a few beasts. I already told you about this, but there's basically a dire wolf.
I think that's sick.
Yeah, it's like Game of Thrones.
I love that.
I love the dire wolf.
I love a good dog.
Yeah, he's a really good dog. I would say that, like, the character growth and depth is pretty good.
Okay.
It's pretty good. It's not great. Like, it's not Brandon Sanderson level characters here. Like, they kind of... like, there's a little bit of growth, but, like, for the most part, like, the loyal person stays loyal. The arrogant person stays arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
Other than, like, a few outlying cases. But, yeah.
Predictable, almost.
Yeah, they're predictable characters, but they're good.
Okay.
And so that's something I'll get into in my final rating, that you can kind of say that about most of this series. Is predictable but really good.
Okay.
Talking about the magic system, it's a very soft magic system. Kind of. I don't know. It's a soft. It's like a. It's a soft and hard magic system. somewhere in between.
Just like a hair, like
no
Harry Potter.
No, no, we don't have to say like anything. We can just leave that where it is. Yeah, I do want to talk to you about that in the spoiler section, because there's two magic systems, and they're both very cool and they make sense. I would say it's a soft magic system because it doesn't go super in depth. Like, it starts to, and then that kind of falls off. Okay. The action, this is where, like, these are fantastic action-wise. It's very brutal, very bloody, and very gory.
That's why I don't think I'd love it.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is, like, the goriness. It's gory, but also it's kind of repetitive. Like, he uses the same phrases over and over again to describe the gore.
Mm.
And this is being nitpicky, I know. But, like, there are countless times... And I wrote this, like, a phrase down. Like, so-and-so dented his helm. He fell either unconscious or dead. That's about, like, a million times that's said. The other one is, they went down with a spray of teeth and brain.
Ew.
Yeah, but, like, it gets almost to, like, funny, like, every time I read it, because I'm like, it's almost like Control-C, Control-V, Control-V, Control-V. One of the coolest things about the action is that each of those, like, groups from, like, the different areas has their own fighting style.
Ooh, that's cool.
And it comes out in the writing. Mm. And
I like that, because that's very realistic of warfare.
Yeah. And it's done really well. So, like, and even, like, the different, like, giant clans fight different ways.
Mm-hmm. I meant ancient warfare, by the way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, today... Anyway, we're not getting into that conversation. Yeah, like, each kind of, like, society goes about war a different way. Like, some of them are very, like, cavalry and, like, horse-based. Others form, like, a shield wall. But they do it almost in, like, a Roman... Or, like, a Greco-Roman... I can't think of the word. That's really going to bother me. They have a bunch of shields and spears.
Pointing through the shields.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Like that scene in Lord of the Rings when the goblins are trying to get to the...
Kind of, yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's really going to bother me. Wow. But so, what I'll say is, one of the characters, like, they're... big thing is that they end up learning all of those fighting styles.
Hmm.
And they basically become, like, the perfect fighter.
Gotcha.
And it's really cool to see them, like, pick up one style, master it, and then move on to the next. And we'll get into that, because that's a decent, like, through line to how this book or series works. So I'll jump into the themes, and then we'll finish on vibes, and I'll give you the rating, and then we can talk about spoilers, unless you decide that you just want to read this series.
Mm-mm, spoil it for me.
Okay. So for themes, it shows, like, the strength of man, not, like, the strength of humans, but, like, the strength of a group of people, just, like, a people, doesn't matter who it is. That comes across in a major way about each group has their strengths that are unique, like their fighting styles or a certain thing in their culture. Everyone has their strengths, and really there's a lot of things in this that the challenge that they're seeing seems impossible, and you end up finding out, like, the only way that you can achieve the impossible is by overcoming that prejudice of these other groups and the, like, xenophobia, and coming together and using your strengths to your advantage. Hmm. So at one point, one of the bad guys says, like, they're just a bunch of, like, rabble. Like, they're all these little groups from different areas. We should have no problem defeating them. And it's, like, they're a heterogeneous group where they only have, like, a handful of each little, like, society. Mm-hmm. And they use those strengths in, like, specialized units. And it's really cool. Because, like, you see these strengths come out throughout the series, and then they end up being important by the end. Hmm. This is something that's a spoiler, but one kind of cool thing is, like, the evolution of warfare is a pretty major theme throughout. Of, like, groups that have these, like, archaic beliefs of valor and honor and, like, gentlemanly warfare. And then all of a sudden someone will come along and say, well, if we do this, like, we can change the game. And it's all these people pushing back saying, no, 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 that's not how, like, a gentleman fights. Mm. And it's like, well, yeah, but I just slaughtered, like, thousands of people, and we only lost a handful.
That's very, like, King Arthur, like, the Knight's Code. Like, yeah. This is how we do things, and we're not going to change this.
Yeah, so this, it almost kind of plays out like World War One, where they were, like, marching in a line, and then someone decided to get a chain-fed machine gun. That's kind of what this turns into. Because, like, in this story, like, the fighting of the time is you all get in big groups, run in together, and then you kind of just do, like, one-on-one duels. Mm. And then whoever has the more skilled fighters ends up killing more of the other side, and then they win.
Gotcha.
And it turns into, like, small unit warfare. Where you're not relying on your strongest person, you're coming together as a team, and it's really cool. You also see that they start using archers because they think archery is, like,
state of the art technology.
Well, no, but they didn't see it as, like, a tool warfare.
Okay, more of a
it's like
survival tool.
Yeah, like, you're not enough of a man to come up and stab me in the face. Like, you have to sit back there with a bow. Mm. And then they decide, let's line up, like, 50 of these dudes and just launch arrows.
See what happens.
Yeah. So, another one is, like, so a big theme, I think this is, like, the coolest part of the book, is good versus evil. And what constitutes good or evil? Hmm. Is it a question of point of view? Is there such a thing as, like, absolute evil or absolute good? And also, like, how much of that is because they're on your side? Like, how much of someone can you overlook because they're watching your back? Hmm. And then, like, does the ends justify the means? So, like, just because, like, you have, like, these great ideas of what you want to do, if you have to commit these, like, horrible atrocities, are they worth it? If in the end you're going to make a better society, but to do it you have to commit horrible acts.
Age-old questions.
Yeah. Very Aaron Yeager. So there's a few tropes I want to point out. There's
only one bed.
No. Good try. There's the spice rating on this one, guys, is a, like, 0.5 chili peppers out of, like, a million. Yeah, there's not much. There is a solid chosen one trope. Mm. Huge chosen one thing. That's, like, pretty major.
Gotcha.
So if you're into chosen one stuff, this does it really well, because there's some twists thrown in there. That's all I'll say on this side of the spoiler wall. There's some enemies to lovers.
God, I love that.
Rivals to lovers.
Oh, I love that even more. Actually, no, I don't know which one I like more.
Will they, won't they? And just kind of like a oblivious man trope.
Oh, God.
And then really touching chosen family.
Aww.
So, vibes. This is the one I'm most excited to talk about. This whole series felt like a video game. So, I know your experience with video games is Hogwarts Legacy. So, I'm going to try to explain it in that way.
I played Star Wars Lego back in the day.
This is more like
Hogwarts. In a doctor's office one.
This is more like Hogwarts Legacy. So, you know how, like, in that, like, you can, like, you level up as you fight more enemies. You level up, you get stronger, right?
Yes.
So, in that, like, the first time you see, like, an enemy wizard, it turns into, like, this boss battle where it's, like, this long, drawn-out thing where there's, you know, they have that big health bar at the top.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it's a whole event the first time you fight a wizard. And then after that, you start to see them, like, around every corner, and you can just beat up on them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because in the game, like, your character proved that they could beat that strong of an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see around the other corner, like, the trial knights. Remember, like, in the caves?
Mm-hmm.
And you fight one, and it's this whole big thing. And then after you beat them, they're around every corner. And you can beat, like, five of them at a time, no problem. Right?
Yep.
So, that's the same thing in this book. Every time, especially the main character, Corbin, he will fight something, and it starts out just like a random dude getting into a fight, and he'll, like, struggle to beat him. And then he'll train and train and train. And then he just starts murking dudes. And then he'll try and fight a giant and barely beat him. And the next thing you know, he's just slicing through giants.
That is very video game-like.
Yes. And so, like, each book kind of has that, like, that boss fight at the end. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, how could he ever beat whatever? And then in the next book, he's like, there's 20 of them. What are we going to do? And then he just fucks them up. So, like, in the final book, he's fighting things. And they get, like, three words in the book. Where it's like, and he chopped off its head. That 2 books ago would have been, like, a world-ending moment. Yeah, so, like, it's really cool to see that progression. Because
mm-hmm.
you feel like he is getting just, like, so overpowered. Kind of like by the end of Hogwarts Legacy, when you have the 3 unforgivable curses and nothing can touch you.
Avada Kedavra.
That's what it feels like in the last book. When Corbin is just walking around, he is just a death machine.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. And so also, like in the video game, how at certain story moments, you kind of find a new piece of equipment. So, like, in Uncharted, you know, he's like, oh, by the way, here's this grappling hook.
Yeah.
Or, by the way, here's a broom, whatever it is. And it's like, they have, like, a story reason for it to come up. And then it's just part of your inventory that, like, you can use at any point.
That's kind of cute.
So, like, yeah. Like, he gets, like, there's multiple things like that where, like, he'll just pick stuff up. And it's, like, a big story reason.
This is mine now.
Yeah. And then, like, by the end, like, he's described like a video game character. Where he has just all of these, like, swords and, like, certain armor pierced, like, pieces that he's just collected throughout the story.
He's just a thrifter. I like it.
Yes. He's a thrifter.
I can relate. I love that.
Yeah, it... To me, so once it feels like Skyrim or The Witcher. It's... The Witcher.
The Witcher.
And Mount & Blade 2, because you make a warband. So, going on to my ratings. So, I am going to give a rating that is conditional. Two thumbs up. With the condition, if you like action-heavy books.
Okay.
If you do not like action-heavy books, do not waste your time with this series.
Yeah. I'm in that boat.
Yeah.
I'll be sailing away.
Okay, so we can talk about spoilers.
Spoiler alert!
No, whoa, whoa, whoa. Not spoiler alert. Just, I have one last thing to say.
Gosh darn it.
I will describe this as the John Wick of books.
Now can I say it?
No. Amazing action scenes held together with a good but not great plot. It's not super unique, but it is extremely well executed. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Like, there's nothing, like, super revolutionary in John Wick.
Yeah.
But it's, quote-unquote, hard. It's the John Wick of books. That's just, that's what it is. Mm-hmm. Okay, spoiler alert.
Hey, I wanted to say it.
Oh, I'm sorry, you say it.
Spoiler alert!
Spoiler alert!
Spoil!
Spoil alert!
Spoil is the, like, foal.
Uh-huh. Spoil.
Spoil. Spoil alert. There you go.
Okay.
Well, that's a good enough.
Yeah, if
that's good.
If you're still here, that's your fault. So, going back, I'm going to just go back through all the things, skip things I want to talk about. The giants are obviously the premier species of the world. Mm-hmm. Better technology. They're just better all around. Like, in the first book, they're seen as these, like, monsters that just, like, take women and eat people and all this stuff. And then you end up meeting giants throughout, and they're just normal people. Now, they're just like people. There are, like, your serial killers and your people with messed up brains. Just like normal people.
Hmm.
So,
that's really unique.
Yeah.
I didn't really kind of even, like, go to think about that.
Yeah, so,
how,
like...
it's, like, the good and the bad of the species, it's going to carry on to other species as well.
Mm-hmm. So, like, we make up the, like, I say we, but when, like, when we encounter a new group of people, like, we get scared, obviously. Like, mm-hmm. Xenophobia is a real thing, guys. But, like... just like this, the giants, when they see, like, the bad, quote-unquote, bad apples, that's a horrible, horrible analogy, but they see those bad apples, and then they take that with their, like, inherent fear of the new and scary, mm-hmm. and they just apply it to all. Be like, oh, well, the giants are monsters because that one killed my mom.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well... that's one giant out of, like, millions. Mm-hmm. It's not that giants are terrible monsters. That one is a terrible monster. That doesn't mean that the giants are. But so these stories have been, like, shared over the millennia. And so, like, a major thing that happens is Corbin trying to convince these other groups of people that the giants are okay. We need to accept their help. Hmm. So characters. There's a lot of characters coming back to life.
I love that.
So
I really like that.
There's this thing, and, like, it starts out as just a saying where it's like, when you die, you cross the bridge of swords. Hmm. And it's like their thing is saying, like, you move into the afterlife. You lay down your sword at the feet of an angel and accept that you're moving on to the afterlife. And it's like everyone crosses the bridge of swords. The thing is, and it's like for the first two and a half books, it's just a saying. And then all of a sudden, one of the, like, important characters dies.
You can. This is spoil, hun. You can
yeah. Spoil. Okay. Well, one of the shitty characters, Lycos, dies, and he is walking through the other side. Also, there's like a solid, like upside down, like Stranger Things here.
Hmm.
Did you watch Stranger Things?
I think I watched like the first season.
Okay, so like the upside down, it's kind of a thing. This is where the angels and the demons live.
Together?
Yes. They live in the same, like, ethereal world.
Okay.
But they can't kill each other there.
Seems fair.
Yeah. So, but now, like, some, at a certain point, some demons get brought into the real world, and they possess these fighters, and then they, like, when you kill them, they get sent back. But if, at the very end, all of the demons and all of the angels get brought into the real world for a final battle. It's so dope.
That's hard.
But if they're killed in the real world, they actually die.
Aw.
So anyway, back to what I was saying. So the Bridge of Swords is a real thing. So when this shitty character Lycos dies, he walks up to the angel and... At that point, his best friend is a demon. And demon Caldeus, who pretends to be an angel through the first book and a half.
Ooh.
So that's the thing about the Chosen One trope.
Yeah.
One of the first characters you meet, he gets told that he's the Chosen One and he's going to be God's special warrior by Caldeus. And so Caldeus pretends that he's an angel, and one of his powers is that he can, like, so he brings his wings out,
mm-hmm.
but he makes them look like angel wings, like the white feathers and everything. But he is actually the freaking, like,
he's a wolf's in sheep's clothing.
Literally, yes. Like, he is Lucifer's right hand man.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Isn't there a character like that's the Beelzebub, whatever.
What's his name? Some of the angel names are like very similar.
Yeah, I think that's really funny. You talked about that at the beginning, but
yeah. So Azroth, in this book, who's Lucifer. There's a demon in the Bible called Azeroth,
mm-hmm.
who's like a high captain of Lucifer. So they took that name and made it the name of the devil.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, the guy dies. His demon friend Caldeus says, "Do you want to go back?" And he says, "Yeah, I have some unfinished business there." And he comes back to life. Another character does, who's a good guy. And he's been wanting death this whole time. And then he finally, like, he dies. But right before he died, he, like, fell in love with this girl.
Aww.
Was given another reason to live. And she's in danger, and he dies protecting her.
Ugh.
And so he sees all of his friends and family on the other side. And the angel asks him, "Are you sure you want to go?" And he says, like, he looks at all his friends and family, and he is like, "I love you all. And I've been looking forward to seeing you since the day you passed, but I cannot leave her alone in this world." And then he goes back into the world to save her.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so sweet.
Mm-hmm. And then she ends up still dying.
God fucking damn it.
Like,
Josh.
Two books later, she ends up dying. And it's so depressing. Because she was, like, she was held captive.
Ew.
And, like, made us, like, a slave by the guy who came back to life because of the demon. That dude made a voodoo doll of her and forced her to be his wife.
My jaw is, like, on the floor, by the way. My silence means something.
So, the guy that came back for her, like, to save her, they fell in love. Okay.
Obviously, yes.
So he came back just so he could kill Lycos, the dude that made her a slave. And so then, at the very end of the last book, the bad man catches her again. And he's basically saying, like, to the good guy, if you come any closer, I'm going to kill her. Like, you have to let me take her, or I'm going to kill her. And she says, I will not be made your slave again. And she throws herself off a cliff and dies.
Jesus Christ, sister.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. It's really sad. Mm-hmm.
That's big sad.
Because
I'm all for the happy ending with the romantic partners in a book.
And it was so close. Like, he literally... Oh... Macquen, I think is how you say his name. He literally came back from the dead so he could be with this woman.
That is... Wow. Aww.
But the great thing is, he ends up dying at the end of the book. But guess who's sitting there waiting for him on the other side?
The evil slave owner person?
No.
I have no idea.
The lady.
Oh, God. No. God.
She she joined all of his family in waiting for him.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, that's kind of the moment that, like, I love. But also, I don't want to read four books to get to.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, there's, like, a lot of really touching stuff that happens. The found family is really good. Like, the main character, like, his entire family gets killed. And the guy that he just thought was, like, his friend basically, like, becomes his father and cares for him. And then they... his found father dies in the last, like, 10 pages.
That's evil.
Yeah, it's so sad. But it was, like, they ended up fighting the devil and the devil's high commander at the same time and killed both of them. So.
It's like the movie that we watched in theaters, like, really early on. It was about, and they both died at the end.
Oh, The Northmen?
The Northmen.
That was a good movie.
That was a good movie, but it was so unhappy ending. Like, they all just died.
Yeah. That was our first date.
That was our first date.
Woo.
That was an interesting choice.
anyways, so the magic system is what I want to talk about next. There's two types. There's the faith-based type and the sacrifice-based type. So the faith one, it's a lot more powerful, but it's less consistent. Because it's like, if your faith wavers for even a second, it turns into nothing. So, like, if you're going to shoot a fireball, you have to believe 100% that it's going to work and that God will make it happen. And when you say the magic words, if you believe it, it'll happen.
Hmm.
But...
Do different species have different magic systems?
No.
Okay. It's all...
Because this is all, like, it's one God.
Okay. Yeah.
All of them believe in the same, like, God and devil.
Gotcha.
So that's the faith one. Sacrifice, you can, like, use blood offerings, flesh offerings, things like that. It's not going to be as powerful. So it's like nowhere near as powerful.
Hmm.
But it always works. So, like, if you say the words and you put, like, a gallon of blood in the bucket, your spell will work no matter what. Yeah, it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I wish it went more into it.
Yeah, that's very soft, I'd say.
Yeah, like, there's, you get to see a few spells, and, like, the main character starts to learn magic, in book one, and you're like, oh, this is going to be sick. And then he just kind of like stops.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Fine.
So he learns like one spell at the end of the first book, and you're like, this is going to be sick. And then he never uses it like ever again. But other people use magic. He just doesn't.
It's like Harry when he, you know, hears the words Avada Kedavra, and he's like, I'm just not going to use that.
Yeah.
Ever.
Ever.
Especially, you know, when it's a life or death situation. Expelliarmus is good.
Expelliarmus! Stupefy! This guy's trying to eat my face off. Stupefy!
Stupefy! Yeah, that's disappointing, I'd say. But I kind of like the simplicity of, you know, you don't have to think too much about the magic system, and that's kind of mm-hmm. relaxing sometimes.
Yeah, it doesn't get complicated. I mean, he has enough going on. He's badass enough because he learns, like, all the fighting styles.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, one of the pieces of equipment that he picks up that I was talking about earlier is this, like, gauntlet with, since he has, like, the pet wolf,
mm-hmm.
he starts using, like, psychological warfare by wearing a wolf pelt, and then he makes this gauntlet with claws on it that, like, when he kills someone with it, it looks like they were clawed by a wolf.
Wow.
And so him and his little will-they-won't-they girlfriend sneak into enemy camps and just slice and dice with their wolf claws. And so then their enemies think that it's, like, werewolves are in their camp.
Wow.
And then he has his actual wolf.
Mm-hmm. Who also is killing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
The wolf has a body count that is absurd. And the wolf gets a piece of armor.
Aww.
Yeah. And the wolf comes back to life. I'm sorry. The wolf pretty much dies and gets brought back to life with witchy magic.
When you told me that, when it happened, when you were reading the books,
mm-hmm.
that made me so joyful. They brought the little puppy back to life.
Yeah, the little puppy was like 8 feet long, but a little puppy.
Yeah, a little puppy.
So themes. Oh, actually, I'm gonna start with vibes. I'm gonna start with vibes.
Vibes.
The final battle is a very, like, this is video game to a T. This is Skyrim. This is freaking all of it. The final battle, which is like a one-on-one duel at the end of this huge, like, huge battle between tens of thousands of people and tens of thousands of angels and demons. At the end of it, it all comes down to a one-on-one battle between Corbin and the High Captain of the Demons. And so, Corbin, like, so he watches his, like, found father get killed by this guy.
Whew.
The same guy killed his mom. The same guy killed, like, all of these people.
I would be ticked.
Killed his found father.
More than ticked, I think.
Yes. And so then Corbin's sitting there fighting him, all the stuff, and he realizes, he's like, whoa, this guy is going to outlast me. I've got to make a killing blow now. So he sees the guy coming in to stab him, so he throws himself onto the guy's sword and chops his head off.
Jesus Christ.
Then, since they both died, they went to the frickin' other side.
Together! At the same time!
And then they continued their fight.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And so all of his friends and family see him just get speared, and they're like, oh my god! So then, they're in the other side, dueling again, and he kills him again. Actually, he doesn't kill him. So, it's way harder than that. He gives him to, like, this sociopath, like, swamp monster.
Okay.
That you meet, like, way earlier.
Hmm.
And it's just kind of like a little side quest. And then he gives the high captain the demons to this basically, like, sadistic... like, he's definitely, like, if this was Criminal Minds, he's a sexual sadist.
I was about to ask.
Yes.
If he can relate it to Criminal Minds, please.
He is a sexual sadist.
Ew.
And he just gives them to him and says, you can have him for eternity. Since he's an immortal being.
Whoo.
Yeah. And then he comes back and he says, I'm alive. And then he lives happily ever, after with his little lady.
Oh, that's good. But you're saying that the relation was a will they or won't they? Did it turn into a won't, will they?
It does in, like, the last 100 pages.
Oh.
Of, I think there's, like, 2,400 pages across all four books. And in the last 100 pages, they kiss.
Yeah, that would want to make me pull my hair out.
They've been, like, will they, won't they? For, like, 1,800 pages. And then they just start kissing.
It's like another Harry Potter reference. But Hermione and Ron.
Yeah. I don't know. This might be worse.
Because,
like, every character other than them two is, yes, like...
Yeah.
Can they just get it over with?
Mm-hmm.
And then other girls are just throwing themselves at Corbin. And he's just like, la-di-da-da-da. Like, these girls like me. And then the girl that he ends up with is pissed. Because she's like, why the hell are you, like, macking on this random girl? And then he's like, what do you mean? Like, what's the problem?
We're just friends.
Yeah, we're just pals. Yeah. And so, 100 pages till the end, they kiss. And then it's a, like, definitely like, they wake up together in camp. it's rough. So the main thing that's the big spoiler, false prophecy. Oh, I laid down my notes. I don't know why I just did that. I need my notes. False prophecy, like, because of human interpretation of divine will.
Ooh, that's heavy.
Yeah. So the guy who thought he was the chosen one, it's because... So, like, he ended up being tricked into thinking he was the chosen one. So he did all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And the devil was sitting in there in his ear saying, like, you're doing this for, like, this is God's will. You need to keep doing this. You need to slaughter these people because they're heretics. You need to kill them. But the whole time, the devil sitting in his ear, they're pretending to be angels. Like, the halos and the white wings and everything. Like, they're saying, like, I'm God's chosen warrior. I'm telling you to do this.
Man.
He does not find out that he is actually the devil's champion until, like, book 3.
Yikes.
So this whole time, he is just slaughtering people and being like, it's the will of God.
Oh, no.
So the actual... like, champion of God, Corbin, right? Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to be, like, this hero. He doesn't think he's worthy, all this stuff. But he ends up proving it. Like, he gets, like, all of these people to come together, like, the giants, all these different groups. And, you know, they believe in him, and they're like, wow. You know, it's God's chosen warrior. He gets the, like... Archangel Michael to fight with him. And the Archangel was like, you are God's chosen warrior. And he's like, I have known it since before you were born. It has been written in the stars that you would be God's chosen warrior. And there's all these signs. The prophecy lines up. Come to find out, that prophecy and what was written down in basically the Bible, like, there's a giant Halvor, and he said that the Archangel Michael told him straight from the mouth of God what to write.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wrote down this huge book of all of God's teachings. And he said these prophecies for these warriors that would come. So, come to find out, God never said any of it.
Ooh.
God never said anything. The Archangel Michael came up with all of it.
What?
On his own. So.
What?
He told the guy to write down all these prophecies and all of these things. And then he went behind the scenes to make sure that they happened. So that people would believe. And it was all because he said his mindset was, if God won't fight back, we need a way to like force the devil into like doing what we want. The only way to do that is for him to believe that there is a prophecy.
Wow.
So
that's a good plot twist.
Yeah. It's a really good plot twist, but like you don't find out about it until book 3.
Okay.
Maybe 4. I don't know, they all kind of meld together. But like the last like quarter of the story that happens. So, and like the thing is, I think it's really interesting because you're talking about like determinism, where it's like all of these things are set in stone, like this will happen. It only seems like they happened because the Archangel was behind the scenes, like a puppet master.
Mm,
making sure.
Strings.
Yeah, making sure that his prophecies worked. But there's a few interesting things that make me think that the God in the story was actually paying attention and making things happen. Because there was a few things in the prophecy that the Archangel could not have messed with.
Well, then why would he put it in there, you know?
Well, because it made it sound better.
Mm. Yeah.
So, like, there's a thing where it says, like, God's champion will be wreathed in storm and shield. And so Corbin, when he's, like, 10... names his pet wolf Storm because it sounds cool.
Aww.
And then can't think of a name for his horse, and so he names it Shield.
Shield. Oh, that's tender.
And so, like, everyone's like, oh my god, what's the name of your horse? He says, oh, Shield. I have a wolf named Storm. And they're like, oh my god.
The prophecy!
Even, so, like, eventually, like, Michael owns up to it. He's like, yeah, I can't lie to you anymore. This is all a sham. Like, you are not the warrior of God. And he's like, I don't know how you've become so powerful, because there's nothing special about you. But obviously there is something special about you because of how powerful you become and all the stuff. And so then, like, all these things happen that should not have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because Corbin's not actually the chosen warrior of God. But they still happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they would only have happened if he was actually the chosen warrior of God.
I feel like it was just God playing with Michael.
Yeah, honestly, I think that's what it is. I think it's God.
Because he knew, probably.
Yeah, God's moving in the background of the story, saying, like, you know what, Michael, if this is how you want to, like, take things, we'll make it work.
Well, interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So Corbin, as soon as he hears about it, I love him for this, he immediately walked up to, like, tens of thousands of people around him and says, "Hey, everybody, I am not the chosen warrior of God. The whole reason why you're here is because you think that I'm like the Messiah. Yeah, that's all bull crap. You can go home now." And most of them are like, "Well, the way you've acted, like, we think you, like, if there is a Messiah,
chosen, you're him.
Yeah, you're him. Even if, like, you weren't chosen, you have become it." Yeah. Yeah. And so that's the kind of thing is, like, Corbin, at first you think he's, like, the determinism. Like, he is going to be the warrior of God. And the only reason why he acts like that is because it was prophesized and because God chose him. But then you find out it's all bullcrap. And he is just that way because he chose to be that way. Yeah. It's not because, you know, he was made like that. He just turns out to be
that guy.
He is that guy.
He is him.
Yeah, and so he ends up talking shit to Michael at the end, and he's like, you know, Michael's like, "Oh, well, now that you know, what are you going to do? You know, are you going to run away?" He says, "No." He's like, "I'm going to fight these people, not because I'm doing it for God or I'm doing it for you. So I'm doing it because these bastards are the ones that killed my parents. They're the ones that killed, like, all of my friends and ruined my life." It's like, I don't care if they're evil or if you're good. He said, they just deserve to be, like, killed. And so then everyone else hears that. It's like, okay, so you're actually, like, you're the guy. But yeah, so I really enjoyed it. But like, if you're not into like combat heavy stories, no. Mm-hmm. It's an action book first.
Gotcha.
All these plot things, it's, you know, it's a drawn out battle scene, then them running across the country, having a conversation, big plot moment, big battle scene, and then just repeat. And there's a lot of like side characters and stories I didn't talk about.
Yeah. I've enjoyed hearing about it. I don't believe I would enjoy reading it. Because of the battle scenes.
I think it would be a really good TV show.
Yeah, I could see that. That would be cool.
Like an HBO show. Mm-hmm. Where like they have the money to do these big battles, make it bloody and gory. Like, very rated R. I think it would be really good. The characters are interesting enough. I think it would be really cool. So if, you know, by the time we're listening to this, there's a TV show in the works, just called it here first.
Sure did, hon.
Mm-hmm. So I hope... Actually, I have no idea what we're talking about next week. If I can finish Dune, we'll talk about that.
Or if I can finish Mistborn.
If we can talk about Mistborn, we're going to have an hour and a half long episode.
That'll have to be like a part one and two, I think.
We'll see.
And we'll just have to cut it.
Uh-huh. We'll discuss. Okay. Well, thank y'all for listening.
Thanks, guys.
And I hope you read this. If you're still listening, though, you have either read it or decided you're not going to. So, cheers.